Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Flurries of fun await this winter in Indiana. Feel the rush of the Midwest's only refrigerated toboggan run. Ski down snow-covered slopes and marvel at frozen waterfalls on a winter hike. When it's time to unwind, from outdoor fun to indoor escapes, your perfect winter getaway starts in Indiana. Plan your trip today at inindiana.com/winter.
Looking for a new home should be exciting, not frustrating. That's why Homes.com might just be the best home shopping site out there. Imagine searching for your dream home without ads cluttering your view. Homes.com's sleek, beautifully designed, ad-free interface makes your search simple and distraction-free. And if you're a parent, you know how important school information is. Homes.com gets it. They're the only site with detailed school and district info from multiple sources, including reviews from Niche. Plus, they've got a super comprehensive and transparent agent directory, making it easy to find the right expert to guide your journey. Oh, and here's a game changer. Homes.com always connects you directly with a listing agent who knows the home best. They even go beyond the basics, offering the most in-depth neighborhood content of any home shopping site, packed with details to help you find a community that feels like home. And the search tools? Unmatched. With 22 data visualization layers, 7 environmental layers, and filters for commute times and architectural styles, Homes.com truly is the home search you've been searching for. Go to Homes.com. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
What is... Dax, are you...
Tracking all our cars on Carvana Value Tracker? On all our devices? Yes, Kristen, yes I am.
Well, I've been looking for my phone for...
In Dax's domain, we see all. So we always know what our cars are worth.
All of them?
All of them. Value surge! Trucks up 3.9%!
That's a great offer.
I know. Sell?
Sell.
Track your car's value with Carvana Value Tracker today.
Look at those folks waiting for number 62.
The net's almost unfair. The 2-1. Swung on, there she goes! Number 62! Move over, Big Mac, you got company!
Welcome back. It's Mullenhaw, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. It's a nice Monday here in the city of Chicago. 1 degree, minus 10 wind chill. Layla Rahimi in for Mully. Cold outside. It's nice to talk about baseball when it's this cold outside.
Think warm thoughts.
Think warm thoughts. And certainly there was a lot of warmth at the Cub convention that wrapped up over the weekend at the Sheraton Grand. We were there Saturday for Inside the Clubhouse, had a great show with Kyle Tucker and Justin Steele and Tom Ricketts and Crane Kenny. And of course, we played the interview we're going to hear now. Friday night, Bruce Levine and I were lucky enough to have an audience with Sammy Sosa. It's for Sammy's first appearance at the Cub Convention in 21 years. There was the applause and ovation and warmth in the room when he was introduced. He did the lap. He had all the hugs. And then Sammy, after the introductions, went backstage. He met with the Marquee Sports Network. He met with us, and then he met with the assembled Chicago sports media. During our conversation, which lasted about 15 minutes, we're going to play right now, it began with Sammy's answer. What was it like being back?
Was incredible. I was waiting this moment for 21 years, so I guess I'm here. Today was the opportunity for me to show the love. They showed me the love also, and I mean, everything went very good. I mean, I'm glad that pretty much they put on the show like the way they're expecting, and hey, you know, another good day.
What was it like seeing some of your old teammates for the first time in a long time, and who might you not have recognized? Anybody?
Well, yeah, I was very happy today to meet everyone. Kerry Wu, Sean Donson, Billy Whelan, you know, Jack Jenke, Andre, I mean, all of them in Ramirez. So I haven't been I haven't seen this guy for a long time. So look, they was happy too that that I'll be back in town now. Pretty much I'm going to see this guy a little bit more often, and looking forward to pretty much continue our friendship.
What was it like for you, who had such great stardom and everything was so wonderful during your career, to have 21 years of being away from the people that loved you the most and the people you performed for at the highest level?
Well, I think, Bruce, I mean, the time is perfect. So God is great. So that was the time for me to come back here for some reason. I don't know. Maybe God, have a plan for me, which is always does. And today was a beautiful night. I mean, no complaint. I mean, I'm happy. I still have some chill. I went up there and put in the show the way they expected me to do. When I was running like that, remind me right field, when I was running to the bleachers. So look, they was happy. Make a lot of people happy, and I was proud of that.
You heard the people react to that when you did that. The crowd still remembers those days fondly. So a lot of people have been waiting for this moment for a very long time. Why did it take this long, and how did we get here to this point? Did you reach out to Tom Ricketts and the Cubs? Did they approach you? How would you explain the way you got here tonight?
Well, I got a good thing. I decided to put my statement out in the right time, so I did it. They respond back to me, and I was very proud, very happy. And also, not only that, I have to say, thanks to Tom Ricky, because, he respond in the right time. So I guess, he was like me. That was the right time or the right moment for me to be back here.
You spent so much time in Chicago originally getting traded to the White Sox. I remember Danny Evans telling me the story about how your first year you wanted to get paid, and you asked him to cash the money and bring the cash down. You put $7,000 in your back pocket and played a whole game. You've come a long way from that, Sammy.
Indeed. Coming from Dominican Republic, that was tough. Get the opportunity that I get, and also I have a lot of family that was waiting for me by then for me to make it to the show. I did it, and also my main focus was play hard, do great, have a great year so that way I can come back home happy, with a lot of $7,000 in my pocket.
Well, you're here tonight because you reached out, you made a statement a month ago, the Tom Ricketts, they responded to it, so they invited you back into the fold. In your statement, you apologized. For what did you apologize?
Oh, 21 years, buddy. You know what I mean? Look, 21 years haven't been here. When you're growing up and you pretty much find the Lord, because I did, and you see things now differently. Before, it was hard for me, to do that. But now, I did it with happiness. I did it because, look, when I grew up, when I was playing, I played great every day. I maybe hurt some people that I don't even know about it. So that's why, I sent my statements. And I think it was, fantastic. Let's say 90% of the fan was very happy. 10%, like always, is going to be say whatever they want. And hey, so be.
But were you apologizing for something specific, for the way you played the game or for the way that you hit the home runs? Were you apologizing for anything specific?
Like I say, I was 21 years out. Without coming here to Chicago, and believe me, my friend, they love me, they support me, and definitely, that's one of the reasons why I did.
What's the most difficult thing about being one of the most famous people in the world? Because you were hanging around with the Clintons, and you were as famous as anybody this side of Michael Jordan the time you played. What was the hardest part of not being famous anymore? What did you have to get used to?
No, look, I play great. I had my moment. I met everybody that I need to be met. But, when you're in that world, it's different, But when you met the Lord and you understand, thing that is not making any sense anymore. So you just come down to the reality. So I believe, I'm a big believer, and that's why, pretty much I'm here today. And, I met Clinton, I met Donald Trump, I met a lot of people. In my day, and I was glad and I was happy to do that. But now I'm a different man.
You're in the Cubs Hall of Fame tonight. Congratulations.
Thank you.
How do you feel about not being in the Baseball Hall of Fame in Cooperstown?
Well, that's another stage. I mean, normally we go one step at a time. I'm just happy to be at the Chicago Hall of Fame. You know, let's see, what the future bring me here with the Chicago Hall of Fame. So pretty much I'm not thinking about something in the past. I like to go forward.
When you think about teammates, managers, general managers, baseball people, who comes to your mind first when you think about your career and who had the most influence?
Well, a lot of people. First, the Lord, because, I mean, my family. I had to mention Larry Hine, which is believe in me when I was pretty much when no one had to say believe in me. He trained me twice. So I guess he sees something of me that nobody else sees, right? And I did it, and I never let Larry Hine down. And also, pretty much, there's a lot of people in my life that I have to, pretty much remember. But, I mean, managers, players, GM. So, there's a lot of people that that are our favorite, too.
How would you describe what your legacy is? And does it bother you at all that it might be tainted to some people?
No, man, don't lie, my friend. I don't really care who think about it or no. My number is my number. Nobody can scratch my number from the board. I don't care what you say. So I'll move forward. I do what I got to do, and I'm happy and I'm glad. And they show me tonight that my number count. So,
this summer you come back to Wrigley Field for the first time in 21 years. You will be able to be honored at the ballpark, mm-hmm. be a part of that ballpark. What have you missed the most about the Chicago fans in Wrigley Field?
Everything, they have a new ballpark. I mean, they have a new clubhouse that I haven't been there. So I want to see everything. I mean, 40,000 square feet. My goodness. When we play, we only have maybe 2,000, square feet clubhouse. So now it's 40,000. And that's one thing that I feel comfortable to. And also I want to go back to the question that you're talking about. I mean, what I'm saying is meaning that because sometimes people get confused when I'm trying to say something. I don't mean it to offend anybody. I don't. But I believe, I'm a man that I've been through so many things in my life. I have a master in fall, but I have another master in get up and move forward. So I feel comfortable about it. I want to make sure that, we don't go to a different direction.
When you come back, do you one day hope to see your number retired? Do you hope to one day see a statue of Sammy Sosa? What do you hope that?
Everything. Everything. Are you kidding me? Everything. Yes. look. The numbers don't lie, buddy. You know what I mean? Look, I'm back. I'm happy. I mean, Tom is a great man. The Chicago organization, they're here. They know the kind of person that I am, because some people got confused sometimes. You don't know me, and you can think, you can say something about me, but you really met me, you see the difference.
What, Sammy, what's your relationship now with Tom? Have you had some private moments where you've gotten to talk, and are you looking to forge this relationship forward for many years?
I think so, because, he welcomed me to his house, because that's his thing, and also I'm glad to do that. I'm honored to be here again, and I believe that the whole Chicago organization, Dennis was great, Gene, Giselle, everybody there, because I don't remember everybody's name, but everybody was great. I mean, still going through something. I'm here now, like I said, and I believe the future is going to bring some good things for
me. When people see you, they think of a certain memory or a flood of memories come back. When you come back here, what is your favorite memory of being a Cub?
Well, I have a lot of memory with me. I don't know. I mean, maybe 21 months, maybe 60, he's 60, 61 here. So I don't know. Look, it was so many opportunities that I have to come through, he's 64, 63, 64, and 66. And the year that I have a home run champion was when I had 50. So, you know what I mean? Go ahead.
I want to take you back to 2001.
Okay.
After 9/11, Cubs come home after being on the road. What was that like for you to get hit that home run and grab that flag from Billy Williams coming around first?
Well, that was incredible because, I mean, 9/11 was happening. Everybody was scared. Everybody was a little bit shaky because, I mean, we never see something like that. The Twin Tower going down like that, a couple of planes. I mean, come on. And also that, I remember that when we have a chance to play the game, I want to do something, like I always do something different, you know what I mean? So I said to Billy, take the flag to first base because I'm going to hit a home run today. I just said it like that. And also, you know what I mean, it happened. And also when, you know, I mean, the flag that I got running to, to right field was incredible too. But I said that to Billy. And then you see in the video that, you know, when I hit the home run, I pass the base and then I come back to get the flag, right?
Right.
Yeah.
It's so interesting that you understood early on that you were not only a ball player and a great ball player, but an entertainer. How did you mesh the two? How did you, because you went out there every day out to right field and you got the fans going. I mean, you were an entertainer as much as a ball player.
I remember seeing that movie, The Gladiator. You got to win the crowd. You had to win the crowd. And I had the ability to do that, Bruce, and I did it. I came out very strong. I was focused in what I wanted to do, physically, mentally. And I believe that that was, you know, why it gave me so far, because I was afraid. I'm strong mentally. And when you do that, you can go anywhere.
Final few moments here on Inside the Clubhouse at Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. David Haw, Bruce Levine, talking with Sammy Sosa. Sammy, was there somebody in the Cub organization, somebody in Chicago, somebody that you made sure you needed to see when you came back to town for the first time in so long?
Bruce, yeah, Bruce, that has been with me for so many years. And outside, I see some couple of reporters that was great to me. And look, you know, I treat everybody nice. People sometimes, you know, they pretty much change their mind when they're going to do something about me. But hey, look, I mean, it's happened. I'm not perfect, but I'm always never forget anybody.
Has it bothered you how you have been portrayed by some people in some circles in Chicago over the years?
Look, I mean, today and age, you know, social media, people want to say whatever they want to say. Now, day and age today, everybody's a reporter. So look, you know, 90% that approve you and 10% is, not happen. Hey, you know, it's like you win the lottery.
When you look at baseball today, can you sit and watch a whole game or is it difficult for you? And how many home runs would you hit now?
Well, I mean, with all the technology that they have today, you know, it can make it easy because, I mean, you know, you got an iPad, you know, you can watch, you know, every pitch, every swing that you do. I mean, normally, when I was playing, normally I had to go back to the clubhouse, you know, I mean, the next day see myself. Today you have it here in the clubhouse, I mean, when the dugout. So pretty much, I mean, it's a great opportunity now. Definitely, I believe that it's, you know, not easy to hit because he's not easy. But, you know, whoever have talent, they have to be focused, stay in the middle, go to right field, and make contact.
Sammy, thank you so much for your time. Welcome back, and really appreciate you spending some time with us.
My pleasure.
Sammy Sosa, that was Friday night with Bruce Levine and me in the interview area at the Sheraton Grand for the Cubs convention. Layla Rahimi in for Mully. It's Mully and Haw back live here. We're going to talk to Bruce Levine in a few moments, Layla, to get his reaction. But my initial response now was the same as I felt then. Obviously, I would have loved more clarity and maybe specificity from Sammy regarding the question about what he was apologizing for. Realistically, I knew that I was not going to get an answer that was specific or one that provided any more clarity. But you had to ask it. And I felt like he came prepared. He had his talking points. And to me, once you get past that ground that you had to cover, overall, I just think the focus was on people being relieved and really kind of overjoyed that Sammy Sosa was back in the fold.
That was the reaction that I received. I don't know if anybody was prepared for the amount that he was going to draw at Cubs convention, if people fully understood that or grasped that. But the hard part is over now. The silence is over. Tom Ricketts responded in kind almost immediately when Sammy made a statement that acknowledged it. And acknowledge is the key word here.
Yeah.
It was enough for the owner of the franchise. I applaud both parties in doing so. Now some sort of bridge can be built. and the foundation can be built to be a part of this team.
And one of the more telling, I think, or memorable exchanges, obviously we're all watching to see how he was with Kerry Wood. We kidded with Big Z about, you know, the boombox legend and the myths and all of those things about who did what when with the boombox, you know, being destroyed in the Cubs clubhouse. But I was really curious how Ryne Sandberg would respond and react to Sammy Sosa's presence. Rhino, obviously, at his Hall of Fame induction speech and after that, has been a very staunch proponent of keeping PED offenders out of the Hall of Fame and doing and playing the game the right way. And so you wondered about that potential for some distance there. And yet there was a good warm moment with Rhino and Sammy. Both guys said the right things. I think if Sammy got the, I don't know who was the louder applause, but it felt like to me, it was in the room that Rhino did, but he is Mr. Cub. He's a cancer survivor and he's fighting it now. Sammy, he was there and Rhino acknowledged, you know, the fact that he had returned. That was a good moment. There were a lot of them over the weekend. And now, as you say, it's a great way to put it. Hard part's over. The next time Sammy comes to town, it's not going to be an issue. The big issue when he comes back will be the people bowing again or whatever they want to do. And I asked him about the jersey retirement or the statue in typical Sammy Sosa fashion. He said, everything, everything.
I think you could hear the relief there. And I'm not discrediting any opinion that Ryne Sandberg has. He is entitled to them all, and people are too. But guess what? You have some people you like on the teams that you watched. You have some people you don't like on the teams that you watched. And that's okay. Nobody's taking that away from you. But some sort of detente needed to happen, and it was enough for Tom Ricketts, and I think that's good enough for me.
And it was good enough for Bruce Levine, and we will talk to Bruce when we come back. It's Mullie and Haw, Layla Rahimi in for Mullie, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
So it's a new year, 2025, and you're thinking, how am I going to make this year different? How am I going to build something for myself? But where do I start? Shopify is how you're going to make it happen, and here's how. Shopify makes it simple to create your brand, open for business, and get your first sale. The best time to start your new business is right now. Get your store up and running easily with thousands of customizable templates, no coding or design skills required. All you need to do is drag and drop. Their powerful social media tools let you connect all your channels and create shoppable posts and help you sell everywhere people scroll. What happens if you don't act now? Will you regret it? What if someone beats you to the idea? Don't kick yourself when you hear this again in a year because you didn't do anything now. With Shopify, your first sale is closer than you think. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to start selling with Shopify today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Imagine uncovering the secrets that others missed. A hidden clue, a silent witness, a twist that changes everything. I'm Carter Roy, host of Murder True Crime Stories, a Crime House original podcast. Join me every Tuesday as we dive into a famous solved or unsolved murder case. Follow and listen to Murder True Crime Stories, an Odyssey podcast in partnership with Crime House Studios. Available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Brad Biggs.
Biggs time.
Biggs.
With Mullie and Haw.
Biggs time.
The Biggs Report.
With Brad Biggs.
Biggs time.
Biggsy.
His name is Brad Biggs.
Brad Biggs talks football with you.
Mullie and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. Brad Biggs is the football man of the Chicago Tribune, a longtime contributor to the station and a valued friend. And he joins us now on the Aturo Hotline. Aturo, your all-weather tire, Aturo.com. Big Zay.
Morning, Brad.
Morning, boys. What's going on?
Well, I got to tell you, the Bears got their man. They got the guy that everybody said they should pursue, that the quarterback has spoken highly of. They got a guy that has run the top offense in the NFL, and I don't know that there's a lot to be dissatisfied with. It's a pretty
interesting and excellent hire at this point?
I think the Bears have got to be thrilled with their ability to get Ben Johnson to Lake Forest this morning and get the contract done and get started on a new era. You have no idea how it's going to turn out, but a process that had more names on it than any team in this cycle wound up working out just right for the Bears. Like, you know, in terms of their plan, they got the guy that they coveted, and now he's got to go to work putting together a staff and kind of studying and learning the roster that he's going to be working with. But certainly I think there's plenty of room for enthusiasm as they went big and they got it.
Brad, I think there was a level of surprise that was shared by everybody yesterday when the news broke, that it came on a Monday, that it came at all. And I think you did a nice job in the Tribune this morning at chicagotribune.com of trying to explain exactly how this all came together. It's naive to think that there wouldn't be some sort of connection somewhere along the line. You point out that Jeff King, the director of player personnel, his agent is Rick Smith. Also, Rick Smith represents Ben Johnson, and maybe that relationship or connectivity played a role in Ben Johnson moving fast when the job was open and his season was over. Could you expand on that and maybe Jeff King's role, Rick Smith's role, and how it made it all come together for Ben Johnson and the Bears?
Well, I think that was a part of it for the Bears that helped them. Ryan Poles was the one that was leading the way. That's how the Bears explained that the process was going to work, and talking to people that were involved in different points in the last 2+ weeks, that's exactly what happened in this coaching search. I don't believe Rick Smith still represents Jeff King, but when he was a tight end in the league 8 seasons, Rick Smith served as his agent. And as everyone knows, Rick represents Ben. So I think that relationship probably enabled the Bears to get some level of trust in the agent, Rick, and in the client, Ben Johnson, as the process played out, right? Like, yeah. And so that certainly probably helped the Bears, but Ben Johnson had to believe what he was being told by Ryan Poles. He had to believe what he was being told by Kevin Warren, by George McCaskey, and the Lions season ended earlier than anybody expected. That put him in play after the game, really, really put him in play Monday morning, right? Like, you know, you got to do your exit interviews and sort of be able to process what happened in the game. But Monday morning, that thing was live, and the Bears didn't flinch in the moment.
So, Brad, we had heard increasing chatter around the NFL that he had his own personnel guy, that he wanted to have control of that through his partner in crime, and that, you know, this was going to be a real hindrance for the Bears. And we heard that the Raiders wanted him, and that Tom Brady was violating the sanctity of the news, the press box, by commenting on the broadcast booth, by commenting on his games and secretly stealing him from the Bears. What was the reality of what was going on? Had they known they were going to hire him from the minute he interviewed? Was he the guy they had identified beforehand? And, you know, Ryan Poles got his guy despite being the general manager and the guy in the way of presumably Ben Johnson's own personnel man.
Yeah, I think some of the stuff that people thought would be these requirements or demands were probably not something that were legitimately requirements or demands for Ben Johnson. You know, we we hear so much stuff that, and I think there's just way too many. There was just too much time for too many rumors to get going. And he's a guy that had been in the hiring cycle the past 2 years. And so I think people looked at it and said, well, this guy's very picky, you know, and they started potentially associating things to him that weren't necessarily the case. But Ryan Poles is the GM. Wasn't a hindrance to the Bears getting the hottest candidate in this cycle. Like, you know, and what did you hear about Ben Johnson? Well, he was going to need alignment, you know, and that's like from the top down. It's going to have to be this clear vision. Well, the Bears certainly were able to sell that to close this deal to get him hired as the next coach. And, you know, we'll see where it goes from here. Like the jump from coordinator to head coach is one that a lot of people attempt. Some of them have remarkable success. Some of them are so-so, and some of them kind of flop. And we don't know where Ben Johnson will go. But his offensive acumen, his work as a coordinator, made him a clear candidate to get a shot for the job, and he's the guy the Bears wanted.
Brad, it's an expensive leap of faith, and I think that when you look at all the things that might have surprised us on Monday, Ben Johnson making the decision so quickly, Ben Johnson choosing the Bears and being the most sought-after head coaching candidate, the biggest surprise to me was that the Bears paid top dollar for a guy that was very expensive. He's not only was the most sought after guy in the market, he was the most expensive guy on the market. And reports are they're paying between $12 and $13 million per season as his salary. What's your level of surprise that the Bears stepped up big time to pay a coach what his market value was?
Yeah, I'm not real surprised. Like, you look at what Kevin Warren's done inside the building since he was hired, and he's got the magic words needed to get George McCaskey to spend money there. Like, you know, he's hired a small army of lieutenants around him, people likely making an awful lot of money in their roles. They've created all sorts of jobs with titles that you look at and you're really not sure what they mean. And so they've built out the staff. Like, so, and I've said it for a while, on the football side, you know, the Bears' continued lack of success, really systemic losing hasn't been a result of them going on the cheap. And there are some people that find that difficult to believe and just want to blame that. But no, they've bought the wrong things. They haven't spent wisely. They haven't made good decisions. So that they go big in a contract for Ben Johnson when they're still going to owe Matt Eberflus money for the next two seasons, I'm not surprised here this morning. Like, that there's a price of doing business in the National Football League, and I think they understand what that price is.
Brad, there was a report out there that now that Ben Johnson is here in Chicago, that Aaron Glenn will be traveling to New York, New Jersey, wherever the Jets are, and have an in-person interview, and the Jets don't plan on letting him leave the building. In other words, there could be drastic changes going on for the Lions. There could be, who knows what's going on with Minnesota. Those were the two top teams in the division. The Packers bowed out, and the Bears beat them at the end of the year. Just wondering, how quickly can this Ben Johnson turnaround work for the Bears in the division? Do you anticipate them having a winning season a year from now? Do they have to redo the offensive line first in order to get to the kind of point production that we anticipate this could mean with Johnson coming to Chicago?
Yeah, I think we've got to tap the brakes a little bit on, you know, what this could mean in terms of wins and losses and success Like, Dan Campbell's record there in Detroit a year and a half in was awful, right? Like, weren't the Lions like 4-20 or something? It was something right in that range near the middle of Dan Campbell's second season. Remember, they couldn't win a game on the road to save their lives. And so I think the roster here is better than it was for the Lions at that point. But I don't want to say that, you know, sky's the limit for them in 2025, when I think one of the issues that plagued the Chicago Bears this past season were expectations that were, you know, completely out of whack. Remember, they played pretty darn good defense for the second half of the 2023 season, and you got to the end of the year and into the offseason and said, you know, that could be a top 10 defense in 2024. Well, which I thought was, you know, attainable. Like, if they improved, they could be there. Well, that quickly shifted to everyone wanted to talk about it being a top 5 defense. And it's just, I think people have got to just be a little more mindful of expectations, because, you know, the Bears have won an awful lot of off-season trophies in the last two decades. And those, you know, those aren't real shiny. They're not real bright. And they don't display those in the lobby at Hallis Hall.
It's a good reminder, Brad. And I think that it's sobering reality that is true and backed up by history. That said, when you look at what this could potentially mean for Caleb Williams, I think we have to back up and say, you know what, Kevin Warren was right. This was the most coveted job, but I'm not sure it was for the reasons that he expressed or articulated. I think it was the most coveted job because of the presence of Caleb Williams. To you, what does this do for his immediate future? And does it change the way that you think of him as a quarterback with his potential in terms of expectations?
I don't think it changes your expectations for Caleb Williams, because those have been high since he got here. It should be. You know, you draft a quarterback number one overall, there should be an expectation that he's gonna be a bona fide big time player. So I don't think that shifts that at all. I think you would hope that he would have an immediate impact for Caleb in terms of, you know, helping him develop and grow his game. It's going to be really interesting because, you know, Caleb and Jared Goff don't have the same strengths as quarterbacks, right? And Goff was a guy who came from the Rams, and they certainly didn't think he was the guy for them moving forward in L.A. And you looked at him in Detroit initially, and you're like, well, you know, they got a guy to kind of tide him over until they can draft their next one. Like, that, you know, and they had to do that to get the bounty of draft picks from the Rams in the Stafford deal. Well, they got him playing at a super high level. Like right now, the past couple of years, you'd rather have Goff as your quarterback than Caleb Williams or whoever else the Bears were rolling out there. So there's ground to close there. But I would expect he could have a big impact with Caleb in the first season, especially if they can, you know, do some work for the players around him. Like, they got to build up the offensive line a little bit, right?
Right. I'm curious, you know, he ran, I think it's 40% play action, and the Bears were the worst in the league with play action. Obviously they got to improve that offensive line, but if they can do that, how will that change the decision making of the quarterback? And I'm very curious to know what this guy can do for the accuracy of the quarterback. You know, Caleb was up and down with his accuracy. It wasn't as good as I anticipated it to be before the year started.
Yeah, I mean, he's gonna see what's gonna fit for them, I think, I don't know. I haven't covered him. I haven't watched him up close in person in practice and talked to players, you know, throughout an entire year. But I would imagine Ben Johnson's like most of the other coaches at this situation. They're going to evaluate what they have and come up with the best plan for those players. Like, you're not bringing in a rigid system that all these people have to fit to. So I think he's got to see what he's got. And yeah, you would expect them to be a lot more proficient at play action, probably to see more of it. You know, I think we're going to be in line to see more pre-snap movement. You know, there's a lot of elements to that Lions offense that made it special and made it hum. And I don't think we're going to see the exact Lions playbook. They don't have the same players, but you're going to see elements of it. And yeah, they should be better. I mean, this should really benefit Caleb Williams. They better hope that it does, because as I said yesterday, guys, I mean, he's got to get better. There's ground to close if they want to feel like they've got a franchise quarterback in place.
Brad, the report that Ben Johnson will bring Dennis Allen in as defensive coordinator was encouraging because of the experience that he brings. You wonder about Darren Rizzi, if he's not going to be a head coach somewhere, if he picks the Bears over some other opportunities. But is the connection with Dennis Allen through Dan Campbell? Allen and Campbell were teammates at Texas A&M. They have a long storied history together. Is that the connection, because there's no other crossover? And how do you feel about Dennis Allen coming in as the DC?
Yeah, I think Dennis Allen's a pretty well-regarded defensive coordinator and has had some success. And obviously, you're getting a guy who's super experienced, who's been in a lot of different situations as a head coach, both in Oakland and then New Orleans. And I think you could see, I don't know how much of the Lions staff he's going to be allowed to bring with him. That will be interesting. You know, maybe no one from Detroit comes with him. Maybe it's one person. We'll have to kind of wait and see. But the Dennis Allen addition would make sense if that's indeed what happens. And then I think, you know, you're going to be looking for some of those people that Campbell's had a background with previously in the Saints that might be members of that coaching staff. Darren Rizzi, most people tend to think he's probably headed to the Denver Broncos to reunite with Sean Payton as special teams coordinator. If he doesn't get the head coach job in New Orleans, he's expected to get an in-person interview for that job. There's some other people involved, Mike McCarthy. I think Mike Kafka is in that one too. But if Rizzi's not hired as the head coach, and that's a bit of a long shot, you're probably looking at three teams specifically. The Broncos, again, with the Sean Payton tie. San Francisco 49ers are working to hire a special teams coordinator. And then Ben Johnson and Rizzi worked together previously in Miami. And the Bears have interest. My money would be on Denver at this point.
Thanks a ton, Brad. We appreciate it. If he can only bring...
One more thing, guys.
Yep.
And if that happens, I think there's a better than decent possibility the Bears consider running it back with Richard Hightower.
Okay, oh, wow. Interesting. Okay.
If he can only bring one guy from Detroit, could it be Penny Sewell? Wouldn't that be? That's what they need. All right, buddy, thank you.
Have a great day, guys.
Thanks, Brad. Good stuff.
This is going to be a challenge. I am well aware of that. I know what this division's about. And this is exactly where we want to be. We're going to go after this thing, and it's going to take all of us in this room. It's going to take this locker room. It's nothing more important than that locker room and us serving that locker room and those players. All right? They need to understand that. They need to feel that from us every single day. And if we do that, the wins are going to come. The playoffs are going to come.
Shoot, shoot, shoot.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670, The Score. There you heard the voice of Ben Johnson, the new Bears head coach. And we are delighted to welcome in John Shoup, the former Bears offensive coordinator, current head coach of the Nordic Storm, which I believe is in Copenhagen. Beautiful, beautiful Copenhagen. Wonderful town. And John joins us on the Score Hotline, brought to you by Aturo, your all-weather tire, Aturo.com. John, good morning. How are you?
I'm good, thanks. How are you all?
Doing well.
We're doing great.
Great to talk to you.
Are you proud of one of your that you are credited with planting the seed, the kernel of a life as a coach, and Ben Johnson now head coach in the NFL? Are you proud of it?
Well, I'm sure happy for Ben. I'm really happy anytime, you know, one of the good guys, and Ben's one of the good guys, kind of gets an opportunity like this. He's a super person, super coach, and I'm incredibly happy for him.
So, John, take us back. You were on the North Carolina staff. Ben Johnson was a walk-on quarterback on the Tar Heel team, and you guys hit it off. What was he like as a player, and when did you know he was going to be a coach?
Yeah, it was kind of late in his career, and at that time, we had a freshman quarterback, T.J. Yates, and so I was just coming in, and Ben was a walk-on, but he was really competitive, really smart, just everything about him, you know, we all loved. It's just we were starting a new program, you know, we were a new staff there, and we decided, you know, to go with T.J. Yates, which I stand behind. T.J. had a nice career in the NFL and now coaches for the Falcons. But so Ben kind of became, you know, like a coach who was signaling. He was kind of, because at that time I was the coordinator and the quarterback's coach. And so, you know, I think the relationship between a quarterback and the other quarterbacks in the room kind of becomes close, kind of becomes intimate. And so, yeah, we became, you know, pretty close during that year, and he did a great job. I think even TJ would say it, did a great job kind of helping him navigate, you know, the nuances of a new offense. And TJ went on to have a great career at North Carolina.
I'm curious, John, what is it? What quality is it in a person that makes you believe they can be a coach, that makes you encourage them to think about that as an option in their life? I mean, by all accounts, this guy is a math major, a computer science major. It's just a different role to take on than you imagine for a football coach.
Yeah, I mean, well, you're right. Ben is highly intelligent. But he couples that intelligence with, you know, good common sense and great interpersonal skills. And in some ways, a coach is just a teacher. And I shouldn't say just, a coach is a teacher. And I think one of the most important traits that I look for in teachers and in coaches is an authoritative demeanor. And Ben has that. And it comes from, you know, knowledge. It comes from deep-seated knowledge of the game of football. And so his authority, you know, there's some coaches that, you know, I think are a bit of a veneer. You know, their knowledge of football isn't as deep as maybe some people think it is. Let me tell you something. Ben Johnson knows football inside and out. He's highly intelligent. He's an incredibly hard worker. But he couples all of that with just, you know, being a really good person, honest, hardworking. And perhaps one of the things I like, you know, most is everything Ben has gotten has been merit-based. I mean, you know, his family's wonderful. I mean, I live in Asheville, outside of Asheville right now, and his dad lives just down the street from me, and his sister is the assistant principal at the high school where I used to teach and my kids went. And so the whole family's wonderful, but everything Ben's achieved has been merit-based. There's no nepotism in this. And that guy's seen fire. He's seen rain in this profession. And has really worked his tail off. And so I think that's where some of his authority comes from, that the people, coaches and players deeply respect.
John, I think in finding out as much as we can about Ben Johnson, reading stories, a couple different times I've seen him attribute this to you in terms of his offensive approach and the way that he has either devised game plans or put together playbooks. He says he learned from you this comment: you make this different look the same and the same look different. And you chuckle. Where did that originate, and why do you think he took that away from his time spent at North Carolina?
Well, I think, you know, deception and conflict of assignment and making the same things look different and different things look the same, those are all good mantras to have when you're trying to devise an offense. And, you know, those are certainly mantras that, you know, from 2001, Jimmy Miller and Shane Matthews would say the exact same things. And when I got to North Carolina, you know, Ben says the exact same things. I guess that's maybe pleasing that he's using some of the same mantras, but Ben's just really taken it to a different level. And, you know, he'd be the first one to say he had the privilege of just working with a great staff and great players there at Detroit. But he put those guys in just unbelievable positions. And, you know, conflict of assignment, I think that Detroit has kind of become, or was over the last couple of years, as good of a play action team as there was. I mean, they could run the ball and play action pass down the field as well as anybody. And that's what making the same things look different and different things look the same. That's what it is.
I'm curious, John, when you watch him and you watch his offense, and he seems like a really creative guy, and they obviously were in the top five in scoring offense over the last 3 years, including this season when they were the highest scoring team in the league. Do you recognize some of the things he's trying to get done, or has he taken the things that you did to a different level?
Well, you know, he's certainly taken it to a different level. I mean, he has exceeded, you know, I would argue any play caller, you know, of his generation. What he's done the last 3 years is just, it's spectacular. And I'll also say it was fun to watch from year one to two, two to three, how they improved, how they build on things. That was really, you know, neat to watch. Of course, all coaches, not just I, all coaches recognize concepts. You know, all coaches could probably call the plays, you know, that Ben had been calling the last couple of years. But the genius or you know, the tact, the ingenuity in it isn't just calling the plays, it's setting them up. And it is, you know, deception, making things look the same that are different and different things look the same. And that's really what Ben has mastered. And, you know, it's one thing to be a great game planner. And I think, you know, I had strength as a game planner, but I don't know that I was the best play caller in the history of the world. I was good, you know, at times, and we were good when I was at Chicago. But I think Ben's really coupling good game planning with good play calling as well.
Talking with John Shoup, who was the offensive coordinator for the Bears from 2001 to 2003, Coach Ben Johnson as a quarterback at North Carolina. And John, I just wonder, have you spoken or communicated with Ben since he got the job? And given your experience in Chicago, which had some success, and you also know what it's like to be in the middle of the storm and in the eye of the storm getting criticized and dealing with that aspect, will you give him any advice before he coaches his first game here?
I'm sure Ben and I will talk, you know, at some point. Like I said, his family's right here in Asheville, and you know, I try not to bother him during the season. I text more with his dad and his sister, you know, as we watch every game. You know, he and I have texted back and forth, but, you know, Ben, he doesn't need any advice from me. He, like I said, he's seen fire and he's seen rain, and we've texted, and we'll, you know, I'm sure when he gets back to Western North Carolina, he and I will sit down, you know, on my front porch or you know, meet somewhere like we have in the past. But I'm really happy for him, and Chicago should really be pleased, because he's got some mental toughness as well that will serve him well in that city. I mean, expectations are high. Mm. He knows that. And, you know, I could promise you there's nobody that's going to call into your show that has higher expectations than Ben Johnson does, and he can handle that.
John, I'm curious. You spent so many years actually working with quarterbacks, and you know what it's like to tap into what they can do, understand what they can't do. That's part of understanding a quarterback. I'm curious, when you think about his relationship and what he's got in front of him with Caleb Williams, how does that work? How do you build that? And, you know, you mentioned that you appreciated how he built from 1 year to the next when he was in Detroit. That's going to be something you know, obviously everybody wants it to work immediately. I think play action will help Caleb Williams. We haven't seen much of that this year, his first in the NFL. How will their relationship help improve Caleb's ability?
Yeah, so I've never met Caleb Williams, so, you know, I can't speak to his personality, but I can tell you Ben kind of gets nuance, kind of gets relationships. And like I said, he's just so smart, but has the common sense and interpersonal skills to match. He'll figure out what Caleb needs, and he'll be that, whether it's pushing some days, pulling other days, you know, putting an arm around you or smacking you on the butt. Ben gets it. And again, I think the thing he brings is just such authority to the position. I mean, he's had such a great deal of success. And the other thing I'll add, you know, and I think this is important, you know, Caleb Williams now has, from the outside looking in, again, I've never met him, but has had some tough times as well. Mm. I always worry about players or coaches that have never really experienced some tough times, you know, like coaches who have never really been fired. I worry about, they think it's all them, you know. I think some of the tough times that maybe Caleb Williams has had, you know, in this past year will actually serve him well moving forward. You know, that's where some real growth can happen. And I think Ben is just such a unique person that I think he's going to bring out the best in him. And I think Caleb could really bring out the best in Ben as well as a fan. I mean, heck, I'm sure anxious to see it. These two guys, I think, are a formidable pair. I really do. From the outside looking in, or at least half the outside looking in, this is a formidable pair.
John, not much of us in Chicago know Ben Johnson as well as you do. And so yesterday he appeared at House Hall. They sent out a clip that went viral. He was talking to the assembled employees at House Hall that were gathered around. And he really, I think, seized that moment. And he showed a side of him that we were curious to see. It was enthusiastic. It was energetic. He had a lot of charisma. A lot of questions exist when offensive coordinators take over as head coaches. You wonder if they can, quote unquote, command the room. How do you think Ben Johnson will command the room?
Well, like I said, everything Ben does is from authority. His knowledge of the game of football is deep. His knowledge has really, over the years, become wisdom. You know, players aren't stupid. They know whenever a coach gets up there and has a kind of thin idea of what the X's and O's are. If Ben is one thing, it's pure substance. It is pure substance. And I think players recognize that. And that's going to give him that authoritative demeanor that it just oozes from him. I mean, when you visit with this guy, you're like, holy moly, he knows what he's talking about. He's on point. And, you know, that to me is leadership, especially at that level. You know, there's nothing inauthentic about Ben. Authenticity, and when your knowledge is deep enough that it kind of is becoming wisdom, players are interested in listening to what you have to say. And I know when Ben talks, I listen, you know, so I think those players will.
You know, it's so wild, like the NFL and the way that it works. I remember when you were here, John, and you would be one of these coaches that would be in the office 24/7, and you developed like a close phone relationship with Sean Payton because you were both guys. I think he was at Dallas at the time. You were kind of up all night working on different things, and you meet people in the league, and you can communicate with them and develop relationships just because you're doing the same job and you're kind of working overtime at it. Is that kind of the way he rolls? Is Ben one of these workaholic guys?
Well, you know, those are questions to ask him. I can remember having conversations, you know, with Ben, you know, even on my front porch here in our farm in Western North Carolina. You know, he came about the job there with the Lions kind of similarly to the way I came about the job with the Bears, that he was an assistant on the staff. He called a few games towards the end of one season, then had to go through the interview process to kind of get the full-time job. And I had a similar situation. Gary Croton had left. I called a few games at the end of the season and had to go through the interview process. And I can remember Ben and I talking about that. And, you know, I don't give advice, but Ben, I can remember him saying to me, if you could do it all over again, what would you do different? And I said, I'd take care of my body. I said, I'm not sure that I was always at my best on Sunday or especially late in the season because I was grinding so hard. I said, I think sleep is a superpower. I think your fitness and stuff like that really matters. And I, as a play caller, didn't always feel at my best on Sunday or late in the season. Now, again, that was a generation ago when right. people were, hey, that's what you did. If you weren't working 18 hours a day, did you really care? I think there's an element of working smarter and not harder now that it seems Ben, you know, is, you know, he's a fitness guy. He takes care of himself. Everybody grinds, and it's tiring. And believe me, nobody's going to work harder than Ben. I want to make that clear. But he also understands the game of football today is a game of endurance for players and for coaches. I got news for you. It's a long season. And, you know, I think he's been at his best when this team has needed him to be at his best. And, you know, that's, I think, the only advice. I don't know that it was advice. He asked me, what would I do different? I said, you know, I'd make sure I was at my best on Sundays. And that involved sleep and rest and taking care of my body.
John, quickly before I let you go, what is life like as a head coach of the Nordic Storm? What is head coaching like in the European League of Football?
Yeah, it's great football, actually. It's an amazing league. It's a 16-team league over 10 different countries. Jack Del Rio just joined our league as head coach in Paris. Jim Tomsula is the head coach in Rhine. You know, I'm the head coach of the Nordic Storm in Copenhagen, Denmark. You're exactly right. And I get to coach a high level of football. It's about like FCS, really good FCS level football, maybe, you know, small cup. We couldn't beat Ohio State, but we'd win that FCS, you know, championship. And it's getting better every year. It's getting better every year. And so this will be, I think, the fifth year of this league. And it's a high level of football, which I think is really fun, and I get to see Europe on someone else's dime too. So that's good.
That's great, John.
Great stuff, Coach. Really fun to catch up with you, and congratulations on your role in this too.
Enjoy this, John.
Yeah, really absolutely.
Great catching up.
Okay, nice to talk to you all.
That is John Shoup, the head coach in Copenhagen. That's great. Imagine that.
Imagine that.
Thank you, George.
Go Bears.
Bears.
It's Grody time, and that means it's time for Mark Grody with Mully and Haw.
Bears.
On 670 The Score.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. Nothing has more energy than that one song with that one guy. It's Grody time on The Score, and
Mark,
he joins us
Grody
on The Score Hotline, brought to you by Arturo, your all-weather tire, Arturo.com. Good morning, Mark.
Good morning, guys. It might be Grody time right now, but I was thinking about this. It's always, always Mully and Haw time, especially when the next head coach of the Chicago Bears is going to be on with Mully and Haw at 9 o'clock this morning.
Nice promo. You're a pro.
You are.
I got you.
You're the greatest.
You got us, Grody. You've been a busy guy this week. You've done a little bit of everything at all hours of the day. What's been your biggest impression from the week that was?
Yeah, I mean, I think still the biggest thing is the surprise of how fast everything came together, how badly Ben Johnson wanted to be here. Like, I like to say it, and it feels like this is the truth, that Ben Johnson came running to the Bears. And for at least for a hiring cycle, the Bears were able to, for now, and in this case, debunk a lot of the boogeyman stories that is the Bears front office, and a lot of things that we've talked about and potential deterrents. None of that existed. It happened. He chose the Bears. Ben Johnson is here, and the Bears pulled off a great introductory day for Ben Johnson, and everything sounded really good and really competent. And, you know, maybe it's not fair to relate one coach to another or the previous, but you guys were both at the press conference. It is night and day to hear Ben Johnson talking relative to Matt Eberflus and his coaching staff, just because I felt like after one day I had an idea of who Ben Johnson was. I don't know, even in covering Matt Eberflus every day, if I ever really knew Matt Eberflus.
That's interesting stuff. I was telling David, I'm driving in this morning, and I heard a report that Liam Cohen is going to get Ben Johnson money down in Jacksonville. And I just had a great laugh to myself. When have the Bears ever been paying someone so they're the seventh highest paid coach in the league and they never coached a game? But, you know, as David pointed out, and it's probably the argument that was used, they gave 4.5, whatever it was, to Eberflus, and another $2 million to Waldron. So, you know, you basically doubled the price of both things, since this guy does both jobs.
That's a great point. And he, I like the fact that, and I don't know if it took convincing. I don't know if Kevin Warren is the one mm-hmm. who said, we must pay this man. Like, cause that's one of the things I'm still trying to figure out in all this. Who gets a little bit of credit here for all this? Is it George McCaskey, the Bears chairman, who said we are going to do things differently? Kevin Warren, did he talk him into it? Was it Ryan Pohl saying, look, if you guys want to move into the century and get this guy, here's the way it's going to have to be. But I do like the fact that this is, no matter what happens, this is one of those times where nobody could say the Bears were cheap about the hiring of Ben Johnson.
So you're part of a Bears beat core that is very aggressive and holds people accountable and asks the right questions. And it can be very competitive, and it can be an environment that, you know, there's a lot of ground to cover, Mark. But I just wonder, this season now, after hiring Ben Johnson, doing something that a lot of people wondered if they could pull off, how do you think that changes the tone, if it does at all, about how we view the Bears? Will it change the tone of questioning? Will it change the tone or the way that you look at the decision makers? Because they apparently, when you do what you just described, go out and get the guy everybody wanted, it does change the way you view some people.
Yeah, I know what you're saying, David, but honestly, I think with each and every one of the coaches that came into the building, and I understand what you're saying, there is more cachet with this coach. This coach is different yep. than previous coaches that were hired. That I will take that completely into mind. But in terms of like changing the way that it's covered and how will Ben Johnson be covered, I think he'll be covered the way all these coaches were covered. Is like it's what I will say for the Bears beats, and which I am included, as you mentioned, that the beat takes the story as it is. I mean, I think that, you know, you go back to, you know, from Mitch Trubisky and Justin Fields, the benefit of the doubt was given those to those quarterbacks. And I think the beat was fair. And I think the beat was fair to Matt Nagy and to Matt Eberflus until it had to be as critical as it was. And I include myself in all of that. So I don't think it's going to be different with Ben Johnson. Honestly, like, if the Bears start having bad days in training camp and the offense doesn't look good and there's interceptions early in the sessions for the Bears and the scrimmages at the end, they're going to be like, okay, where's the Ben Johnson difference? So I love the question, Haw, but I don't think that things are going to be any different in terms of the way we cover Ben Johnson and how critical we are of him. But we will, I think there'll be a sit back and listen period to him to see what actually matches up with what the progress is on the field.
What specifically do they need to improve immediately to be able to run his offense?
Well, I guess the easy answer there, Molly, is the offensive line. I mean, that is one of the answers for sure. You know, right. other than Darnell Wright, there's upgrades that can be, it is upgradable at every single one of those positions. But one of the things that I was thinking about, and maybe this will come up with you guys when you talk to Ben Johnson, and that is specifically the running backs room as well. Like, that we are going to be asking these questions because we know that, you know, over and over and over we answer the questions of, yeah, that Detroit offense, that defense is not coming to Chicago. But is his system good enough? And nobody wants to hear about a system or anything like that, but can he get a running system that is somewhat effective or close to as effective as what he did in Detroit? And is that a product of the offensive line? Or could he, if he gets it right, could DeAndre Swift thrive in that? So for some reason, what I've been thinking about more than anything is, yeah, offensive line, but do you have the right running backs to do what you want to do? And I know Jahmyr Gibbs and David Montgomery are now walking through that door, but is Swift and Roschon Johnson, can you work with that? And that's something I'm curious about.
Bears made official on Thursday they would not be retaining certain assistant coaches, Chris Beatty, Thomas Brown, on defense, Eric Washington, and then the name of Chris Morgan, Simo, as you would call him, Grody.
That's right.
He
that's right.
was the holdover on the staff when Shane Waldron took over. Now that becomes a big job. Any surprises on the staff changes, and how were you viewing what they're pursuing at defensive coordinator?
Yeah, no, that's the next big step here. And, you know, as far as you just mentioned the defensive coordinator spot, and I'm hearing some of those names, Durante Jones out of Minnesota, the DB's coach, and Aubrey Pleasant, the Rams passing game coordinator, is a name that's popped up for coordinator spot. The Dennis Allen thing I think is interesting because after the press conference the other day, we did a little bit more of an informal talk with Ben Johnson. Mm-hmm. Yeah, one of those. Like, so we gathered in one of the conference rooms at Hallis Hall. They were nice enough, the media relations folks, to kind of let us get to know. It was mostly on the record, to be clear, but it was interesting. You know, like, kind of recorders down, sitting around a table with him just kind of, you know, letting his guard down just a little bit in terms of talking to us. And I thought it was interesting that one of the things that he shared with us is that he, at that point, a couple days ago, he had not met Dennis Allen and had not talked to him, but he did concede that he likes the New Orleans defense. Another one of the things that he said, yes, there's a lot of great candidates, which is no big revelation. Who's not going to say that? But he said, indicated that there was lots of people reaching out that this would maybe be a difficult decision in that there's going to be so many potential candidates, which makes sense, right? He's the hot offensive coordinator. There's the Bears, it all of a sudden feels good to go to the Bears again, which I think Ben Johnson has caused. So, you know, he kind of said that he was surprised by all the candidates that were contacting him. So maybe he's just sorting through the dozens and dozens of candidates out there. I hope that's the case.
What, in your opinion, is the most important position coach to hire? It's probably the offensive line coach.
I guess.
If you got a guy like Hank Fraley in here, honestly, and I know he's not coming. I know that's already reported. But that's the kind of guy that could look at someone like Kieran Amagaji and figure out whether he could play, how he could play, where he could play.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's incredibly important. And I think we're going to learn more about how much Ben Johnson knows, too, about offensive line play. But, Yeah, I can't imagine that. Yeah, there's really, you know, going through them all, you're right. I mean, that's got to be the most important spot. But I really do. Like, I want to know, when this story broke, you know, one of the things, I was joking around with Matt Spiegel about, I don't know how much I care about the offensive coordinator. I said, bring in that Mark Helfrich type or the Bill Lazor, these guys who were.
Name only.
Yeah, exactly.
That's fine.
Exactly, huh?
That's fine.
Yes, those types of guys, like the Mark
it's Ben Johnson's offense. He's calling the plays.
Exactly, and he needs somebody who can do a lot of the work in practice so Ben Johnson can do what we always implored Matt Eberflus to do, and that is to focus on the rest of the team along with the offense.
So, Grody, didn't know you had this kind of private time with Ben Johnson. What are you holding out on us? What are you holding back? Share,
yeah, what's
spill.
The secret info? Let's go.
You know what? Let me see here. I'm going.
Hey, Nuggets, you
looking.
Like your Nuggets.
Yeah, I know you do. You can probably hear the pages turning. Let me see. Okay, here's some things. Ready? Random notes from that meeting. And guess what? Check, this is perfect, guys. And after I get off the air with you guys in a little bit, we're going to record the podcast that David Haw created that he owned. That is Take the North. That we are going to actually be playing some of the audio
you stole from him.
So here's just like random, completely detached stuff that he said during that I thought was interesting that I could share. Said that he confirmed, not that we didn't know this, but it was like interesting to hear it from another coach. He said, yeah, we didn't want to throw to Jalen Johnson. He said, we did not throw towards Jalen Johnson. He loves Kyler Gordon, name checked him. Let's see, what did he say? He called himself low ego, low maintenance with us when we were talking to him, which is music to
that's
our.
Appealing. The low ego part of it,
that's what he said.
Comes through.
Yeah. And then here's another little thing right here. He said, and this might become something as time goes on, that he wants to be known more than just an offensive guru. Like, he appreciates that,
wow.
I think.
Wow.
Yeah. Like, but I mean, that's good, right? He wants to be, that's what you want to hear if you're a Bears fan,
you know,
right?
I am very curious. We were talking earlier about how he became an offensive guru. He's not a guy that had like one mentor or one school of study or comes from Shanahan or McVay sneezed on.
Coach tight ends.
Yes.
Quality control.
Yes.
Worked his way up and all of a sudden now he's the guy with his own offense.
Yes, wild.
Right.
It's crazy, Grody.
Right.
Good
stuff. And actually I don't remember if this was the conversation we had or if it was at large, but he did say too, he said, you know what, and damn it, I was great at those jobs. So there's a nice, there's an appropriate confidence.
So he is an egomaniac.
What?
No, I'm joking.
It's a humble confidence. Soft spoken.
Hey, start with that at 9 o'clock. No, yeah. It was appropriately put.
Son of a.
Stop stirring it up,
Mark,
Grody.
You're the best.
Thanks,
thank you,
Grody.
Buddy.
You guys are a couple of beauts. I love you both. Talk to you later.
That's our guy, Mark Grody. I love Mark Grody.
It's time for the Extra Point with Mullion Haw on 670 The Score.
We often talk about money as a measure for expectations. What do you make of Ben Johnson coming to the Bears on a $13 million contract? He's the seventh highest paid coach in the league, making more than all of the remaining coaches left in the postseason. Of course, not more than Andy Reid. He leads the NFL as a $20 million man.
Of all the things that are stunning about the Bears getting Ben Johnson to coach in Chicago, the most pursued head coaching candidate out there, it is this. It is the financial commitment and finding the resources, which they clearly have, but it is coming through and backing up their big talk with a big commitment. This is, I think, the Kevin Warren effect. I don't believe George McCaskey would have been this ambitious. I don't think that George McCaskey would have spent this kind of money. I think that Kevin Warren got ownership in a room. And by ownership, I mean probably George and Brian and maybe Pat. But I don't think that this happens without somebody appealing to the McCaskeys and telling them that this is worth it. This is the price of playing poker, and this is how you win in the modern NFL. You get what you pay for. We heard that yesterday. You get what you pay for. Ben Johnson being paid $13 million a year without any head coaching experience reflects the way the NFL is taking off. I don't know if he's the seventh best coach in the NFL, but I do know that contracts are projections, and by the end of the deal, he better be. He better be, and the Bears better be in the playoffs on a regular basis. So when you hear a guy talking about 2025 being a playoff caliber team, yes, that's the rhetoric you want. Those are the expectations you have, because this is a guy who's getting paid to deliver.
He sure is getting paid to deliver. I think even as important, or maybe in my opinion more important than the $13 million a year, eventually we'll find out. Maybe you guys know and can answer my question right this second. Is it 4 years? Is it 5 years? Is it 6 years?
I think it's six.
Did it get to six? Because six is a long time.
Yeah, we don't see
a lot of that, right?
He's 38 years old. Did you see a young family there? It's probably six. I would be surprised if it's not.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I mean, saying 6 years. The other part. So, you know, David, you mentioned, and you and Mully both gave Kevin Warren credit about who had the best day up at Halas Hall when this announcement was made. I threw George in there as well. But, you know, George McCaskey yesterday said, Ryan told me this is the guy he wanted, and I told Ryan, go get him, right? And then Kevin Warren said, I'm going to give the Bears fans, and you know, we're going to use every resource available to make the Bears great again, basically. I'm not quoting him directly. So as you put it, this is the price of playing poker in the NFL these days, and I'm glad they went out and did this. And, you know, our guy Potsy tried to say, hey, George, what's different about this time? He didn't really appreciate that, but clearly this was different. Nobody flew middle seat Southwest. Air McCaskey was over at the executive airport bringing people in and out.
I give Kevin Warren a lot of credit for this. I think it's pretty extraordinary. I am old enough to have been around, to have interviewed the late Michael McCaskey about different moments in his career. And he said that he will never forget, he would never forget that the day that he gave Walter Payton a check for $1 million. It just blew his mind that this is a player. And, you know, if you're going to pay anyone, you'd pay Walter Payton $1 million. It's like out of, you know, like a comedy or something. $1 million like stops you cold. Now you got $100 million deals. You got quarterbacks making $300 million. They may eventually have to give the guy who quarterbacks them $500 million someday. Who knows? But to see a Bears coach get $13 million, I kind of felt the way that Michael must have with $1 million. Like, what? Like, you give it $13 million to a coach? It seems like a ton of money for a first-time hire head coach.
Three times what you paid your previous head coach.
And that blows my mind when I look at it that way. But after that news conference and feeling like maybe things will go their way for a change, it's probably worth it. And it's probably what, you know, you're in Chicago. You're not in, you know, some small town. You should be able to take the revenue that you're earning, and your earn is a bit, the Bears are valued at $6.2 billion.
Right. It's not Charlotte. It's not Indy.
This is a lot of money.
It's not Cleveland.
And that's what you're playing, you know, with the big boys. Mm-hmm. So I just think it's pretty extraordinary that they paid that kind of dough to a head coach. You know, the other thing that crossed my mind is, you know, people were complaining that Craig Counsell, who already was a manager and already had done things, was making $8 million a year, and how managers, you don't have to pay managers, etc. You're paying this guy $13 million. Is he the highest paid guy in town? He's got to be. Like, I don't know everyone's contract, but
there's no doubt about it.
Billy's not making.
No, he's not. No,
$13 million
a year. I think it's around six.
I mean, that's life-changing, altering money for that man and his family, Ben Johnson. And that's what happens when you're the hottest candidate.
The NFL rules, this is a Bears town, so yeah. The Bears head coach theoretically should be the highest paid coach in town.
And what's funny about this, and I don't even know if funny is the word, but the oddity here is that, you know, how long will he be the highest paid How long will he be in the top 10? Like, give it a couple more cycles. If this keeps going.
Well, the way the NFL is growing, There is no salary cap for coaches.
And the way they're making money on all the different apps out there, you got to be kidding me.
I think
me.
I just heard you saying Ben Johnson deserves an extension.
Ben Johnson will be looking for...
get to the playoffs, talk contract extension.
If he did sign for 6 years in year seven, boy, that's going to be a lot of money.
If he signed for 6 years and things go well, that contract will be ripped up and he'll be having a new deal in year three.
There you go. Yeah. There you go. That's fun to think about. All right. We've got your calls coming in. 312-644-6767. We've got to, I mean, I could talk
a lot
about
of audio.
This stuff all day.
A lot of audio to go through. A lot of stuff that we heard want to talk about.
We'll do that next. Mully and Haw on the Score. Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670, The Score. What a pleasure to welcome in Chris Getz, the White Sox general manager. He joins us on the Score Hotline, brought to you by Atura, your all-weather tire, aturo.com. Chris, good morning. Welcome to the show, and congratulations on Sox Fest. Should be a lot of fun tonight.
Yeah, good morning, guys. Yeah, definitely a... you know, nice part of the year here. Kickstart the year just before spring training with Sox Fest.
Yeah, I've been to so many of these Sox conventions over the years that I've watched you in them. I've seen your presentation at different points.
So what's the message, Chris?
It's always fun to, last night we had an event with our sponsors downtown. And, my favorite part was just having the players together. You only get so many opportunities in off seasons. And we got a lot of new faces mixing in with some guys that have been here. So, there's certainly a lot of symbolism, to be recognized with the group that we have in here.
When you see the season ticket holders at the event, when you project what your message is going to be for 2025, how do you describe where expectations are for a season that I think Sox fans think is going to be another struggle, but at least you have a direction and a plan?
Yeah, I mean, the message has been the same from the beginning. You know, we're committed to building from the ground up. The so many foundational areas of the organization has taken up a lot of our time and our resources, for the long term. You know, in the short term, there's some pain that you need to endure, and we certainly went through that last season. But, you look at our farm system, the increase in talent that we put together in the last year, infrastructure-wise. You look at, what we've done on the pitching side with a Brian Bannister leading the ship there. We brought in a Ryan Fuller to oversee the hitting and essentially a Banny equivalent. You have discussions with some of our player development staff and players, and you're talking to free agents, although the record was not pretty last year. I don't think there are plenty of people, both players and staff, that want to be part of the White Sox. So I think it's exciting for our fans to hear that.
I know this is premature to ask, but what the heck? Who's going to be the opening day starter? Any idea? Would you go with Jonathan Cannon? Is that an obvious choice? Am I reaching here before you find out what people can do?
Yeah, I think it's a little premature to name an opening day starter. The roster is still shaping. Mm-hmm. These guys are still developing. We've seen the capabilities of a Jonathan Cannon, a Sean Burke. You got a Martin Perez, who's been pitching for a long time. So we've got some options. I can't say that we've got, a real standout. This is an automatic. He's going to be the opening day roster. I think, this time last year, who's going to be our opening day starter? It wasn't easy to give a confident answer. And then there was Garrett Crochet about a week before, in which I'm sure many thought was a little nuts. And then he kickstarted an unbelievable season. So, still taking form, which is not surprising considering, where we're at as an organization.
Chris, where are you as an organization with Luis Robert Jr.? How have the conversations gone? How often do you hear from other teams wondering if you're willing to trade him?
Well, for one, although it was a season, unfortunately, that he missed a lot of time. I mean, he looked really good in spring training. You know, even in that short window at the beginning of last year, he was having really good at-bats. He was hitting for power. You were seeing the old Louis Robert. Then he has that, you know, that leg injury that just obviously took him out of the season. He came back, and it, you know, he was just out of sorts, lost his rhythm. He just wasn't himself. So, but he finished healthy, and he's had a good off-season training down, you know, in Florida. So, you know, for him, gosh, we got to find a way to keep him on the field. If that means we need to be very intentional with, you know, using the DH, which we really haven't been able to do in years past because Eloy, you know, was in that spot on a regular basis. Move him to the corners on occasion. You know, just be very watchful and mindful of his workload, because if we can keep him on the field, even if he's not, you know, in center field every single day and night, you know, the production's going to be there. And everyone around the league recognizes that. They do, and that's why they have interest. Unfortunately, you know, when it comes to conversations, you know, they want to get a, you know, just a fraction of, you know, they're only going to pay a fraction of his full value. You got a guy that was a 5-win player in 2023. And last year it was, you know, he just got chunks of him because of the injury. So we believe in the talent. We got to keep him on the field because he can be a special player.
I'm really fascinated by the way that you've brought in the pitching guy, and the, you know, everyone's talking about Bannister, and you know, I think all of us are looking at the young pitching that is on the way. You know, all the lists come out and they're named the two best left-handed pitchers coming into this season by MLB last evening when I saw it. Do you really, I mean, how long does it take for guys to get here? I feel like if I had a fast forward button, I'd be watching some really good Sox teams. Is that the way this is going?
Yeah, I think that's right. And you bring up a, you know, a really cool, exciting example with the, you know, we've got two of the top, yeah, you know, left-handed starters in baseball, minor league baseball. And, you know, I from what I've gathered, I think in the 15-year existence of at least MLB Pipeline putting those out, I don't think that's that we've seen that. So it's a unique situation. You know, Noah had, you know, 60 or so innings of Double-A. You know, we're talking about you know, a kid, a cold climate high school signee. He didn't have a lot of innings under his belt, so, you know, early on you got to get him through, you know, full seasons appropriately as he fills out his frame. But, man, he's got a chance to be really special. But, you know, we're not too far off just because we've got, you know, close to 90 innings or at the 90-inning threshold. So we're starting to tap into, you know, what a, you know, being able to make major league starts. He's got stuff. He throws strikes. You know, he's savvy on the mound. So, I don't say he's knocking on the door, but he's not that far up. And then Hagen Smith, you know, fifth pick in the draft last year, arguably the top pitcher we believed he was, and I know a lot of organizations did. You know, you look at, you know, what Paul Skeens did, and I don't want to put him in that category necessarily because, you know, what Skeens was able to accomplish last year, but, you know, some of these top college arms pitching in the SEC, you know, they can move quickly as well. So I don't think we're that far off of watching a Noah Schultz and Hagen Smith at the front of a rotation for the White Sox, because I think it's in the very near future.
That's exciting. That's stuff. Yeah. So, Chris, when you look at the way you've structured your front office, it's been very interesting. Brian Bannister has a ton of respect coming from another organization. Ryan Fuller, director of hitting from the Orioles, also well-respected throughout the game. I think it's curious in terms of the player development. Those guys are not in your major league dugout. Those guys are overseeing the entire operation from every level, because that's your approach to player development. That's also intentional. Why is that decision made that those guys, as important as they are, will take the role and do the job in that way?
Well, for so many years in our game, you know, and it applied here, but, you know, throughout Major League Baseball, where, all right, the Major League hitting coach would set the philosophy for the entirety of the organization from an acquisition standpoint, from a development standpoint. Gosh, I mean, we're talking about having to manage, you know, a lot when, you know, we know how difficult it is to hit at the Major League level and how much time and focus and emotion that takes. So to have someone in a Banny position, or, you know, Ryan Fuller on the hitting front, obviously, the – to have someone that is a step removed, there for support with our major league coach and our players, can understand and see trends before they're happening. And it's just another lens, but really another hand for the major league coach and our minor league coaches. So, you know, it's someone that's just paying attention to what's going on in the game from a macro level, while our coaches can just show up each day and execute a plan for those particular players. So, you know, we talk about it now, it just sounds so obvious. Like, gosh, how are we not doing this for years in the game? And you know, last year was the first year we did it on the pitching front, and, you know, we reaped the rewards for it. And I would imagine that the same thing's going to happen on the hitting front. But most importantly, we're just building this foundation, and we know it's going to pay off.
Chris, my wife's from Grosse Pointe, and she's one of the most well-mannered people I've ever met. How are you, a Grosse Pointe native, going to be able to handle the kind of sparring that Kenny Williams used to do at these Sox conventions? Are you looking forward to your meeting of angry fans? Is that what is going to happen?
Well, I you know, hopefully there's not too much anger. I realize that there's going to be some, you know, for me, I'm very comfortable talking about our what's going on with the White Sox, where we're at, where we're going, what we've accomplished in a year. You look at bringing in a Will Venable,
right,
or even a Fuller, some other individuals, and even some players. They, you know, a year ago, I don't think we get some of these people, this type of talent, because they were just ideas, and now we've got more things that are tangible. So it's starting to happen. You know, I've got, you know, too many positive things to point to. Now, I certainly understand that we're all in this to win at the major league level, and that's what our fans want. But to make that happen, I've got to go about it the right way. We have to, and stay committed to that. Because you start making short-sighted decisions, and that's even more frustrating in the end.
Enjoy the weekend, Chris. It's going to be a lot of fun at the Romova Theater. It's a cool concept. It's going to be an intimate setting, and I hope that you get the most out of it. Thanks for joining us this morning.
Thanks a ton, Chris.
Very good, guys. Thanks for having me.
That is Chris Getz, the general manager of the White Sox. Do you remember those times with Kenny be like
combative
people?
Yeah,
oh my God.
But that kind
and
of
that's his personality.
That's his guy. That's
exactly.
His personality.
And
Kenny Williams will challenge you.
Yes,
and I think that was why he was an excellent executive.
Yeah, very interesting.
Chris Getz is a little bit more affable.
Yeah.
Oh, I don't want to say it, just a different personality.
Different guy.
He's not going to challenge
Will
you
Venable,
as much as
first time he'll really meet Sox fans. Fun.